Welcome to this Uvula Audio presentation of L. Frank Baum's Policeman Blue Jay. Volume 5, Chapter 16, The Beautiful Dance. Before long, they came to another and larger sheet of water, and this Twinkle decided was the most beautiful lake she'd ever seen. Its waters were mostly deep blue in color, although they had a changeable effect and constantly shifted from one hue to another. Little waves rippled all over its surface, and the edges of the waves were glistening jewels which, as they scattered in spray and fell into the bosom of the lake, glinted and sparkled with a thousand flashing lights. Here were no rushes upon the shore, but instead of them, banks of gorgeous flowers grew far down to the water's edge, so that the last ones dipped their petals into the lake itself. Nestling upon this bank of flowers, the royal messenger turned to his companions and said, "Here let us rest for a time, while I call the friendly fishes to entertain you." He ended his speech with a peculiar warble. At its sound, a score of fishes thrust their heads above the surface of the water. Some of them were goldfish, and some silverfish, but others had opal tints that were very pretty. Their faces were jolly in expression, and their eyes, Chubbins thought, must be diamonds because they sparkled so brightly. Swimming softly here and there in the lovely waters of the lustrous lake, the fishes sang this song.
"We are the fishes of the lake. Our lives are very, very deep. We're always active when awake and quiet when we're asleep. We get our fins from Finland. From books we get our tails. Our eyes, they come from Ireland, and weighty are our scales. We love to flop and twist and turn when 'tis our whim. Yet social etiquette we learn because we're in the swim. Our beds, though damp, are always made. We need no fires to warm us. When we swim out, we're not afraid, for otters cannot harm us. We're independent little fish and never use umbrellas. We do exactly as we wish and live like jolly fellows."
As the fish concluded their song, they leapt high into the air and then plunged under the water and disappeared, and it was hard to tell which sparkled most brilliantly, their gold and silver bodies, or the spray of jewels they scattered about them as they leapt.
"If you should dive into this lake," said Ephel the messenger, "your feathers would be dripping wet when you came out again. It is here we birds of paradise bathe each morning, after which we visit the gleaming glade to perform our beauty dance."
"I should like to see that glade,"
said Twinkle, who was determined to let nothing escape her that she could possibly see.
"You shall," answered Ephel promptly. "We will fly there at once."
So he led the way, and presently they entered a thicker grove of trees than any they had before noticed. The trunks were so close together that the birds could only pass between them in single file. But as they proceeded in this fashion, it was not long before they came to a circular space which the child lark knew at once must be the gleaming glade. The floor was of polished gold, so bright that as they stood upon it, they saw their forms reflected as in a mirror. The trees surrounding them were also of gold, being beautifully engraved with many attractive designs, and set with rows of brilliant diamonds. The leaves of the trees, however, were of burnished silver and bore so high a gloss that each one served as a looking glass, reproducing the images of those standing in the glade thousands of times, whichever way they chanced to turn. The gleam of these mirror-like leaves was exceedingly brilliant. But Afel said that this radiance was much stronger in the morning, when the rosy glow of the atmosphere was not so powerful.
Then the king bird and all the nobility of paradise who rejoice in the most brilliant plumage come here from their bath and dance upon the golden floor, the beauty dance, which keeps their blood warm until the feathers have all dried. While they dance, they can admire their reflections in the mirrors, which adds greatly to their pleasure.
Don't they have music to dance by? Asked Chubbins.
Of course! There is a regular orchestra that plays exquisite music for the dance. But the musicians are the female birds of paradise, who, because their plumage is a modest brown, are not allowed to take part in the beauty dance.
Well, I think that the brown birds with the soft gray breasts are just as pretty as the gaily clothed ones,
said Twinkle.
The male birds are too bright, and they just tire my eyes.
Afel did not like this speech, for he was very proud of his own gorgeous coloring, but he was too polite to argue with his guest, so he let the remark pass.
You have now witnessed the most attractive scenes in our favored land, but there are some curious sights in the suburbs that might serve to interest you.
Oh, you have suburbs too?
She asked.
Yes, indeed. We do not like to come into too close contact with the coarse outer world, so we have placed the flying things that are not birds midway between our paradise and the great forest. They serve us when we need them, and are under our laws and regulations. But they are so highly favored by being permitted to occupy the outer edge of our glorious paradise that they willingly obey their masters. After all, they live happy lives, and their habits, as I have said, may amuse you.
Who are they? Inquired Chubbins.
Come with me, and you shall see for yourselves.
They flew away from the grove of the gleaming glade, and Afel led them by pleasant routes into a large garden with many pretty flowers in it. Mostly it was filled with hollyhocks, yellow, white, scarlet, and purple. Chapter 17. The Queen Bee. As they approached, they heard a low humming sound that grew louder as they advanced, and it aroused their curiosity.
What is that?
Asked Twinkle at last.
Afel answered, It is the suburb devoted to the bees.
But bees are not birds,
exclaimed Twinkle.
No, as I have told you, the suburbs contain flying things that cannot be called birds, and so are unable to live in our part of the paradise. But because they have wings and love all the flowers and fruits as we do ourselves, we have taken them under our protection.
Afel perched upon a low bush, and when the child larks had settled beside him, he uttered a peculiar shrill whistle. The humming sound grew louder. Then presently hundreds of great bees rose above the flower tops and hovered in the air. But none of them approached the bush, except one monstrous bumblebee that had a body striped with black and gold. And this one sailed slowly toward the visitors and alighted gracefully upon a branch in front of them. The bee was all bristling with fine hairs and was nearly half as big as Twinkle herself. So the girl shrank back in alarm and cried,
Oh, I'm afraid it'll sting me.
How ridiculous,
answered the bee, laughing in a small but merry voice.
Our stings are only for our enemies, and we have no enemies in this paradise, so we don't use our stingers at all. In fact, I'd almost forgotten I had one until you spoke.
Permit me to introduce Her Majesty, the Queen Bee, said their guide. These, Your Highness, are some little Chardarks who are guests of our king. I have brought them to visit you.
They are very welcome,
returned the Queen Bee.
Are you fond of honey?
She asked, turning to the children.
Sometimes, replied Chubbins, but we've just eaten and we're chock full right now.
You see,
the queen remarked,
my people are all as busy as bees, gathering the honey from every flower.
What do you do with it?
Asked Twinkle.
Ah, we eat part of it, store up the rest for a rainy day.
Does it ever rain here? Inquired Chubbins.
Sometimes at night, when we're all asleep, so as to refresh and moisten the flowers and help them grow.
But if it rains at night, there can't be any rainy days,
murmured Twinkle.
So I can't see the use of you saving your honey.
Nor can I,
responded the queen, laughing again in her pleasant way.
Out in the world, people usually rob us of our stores, and so keep us busy getting more. But here, there are not even robbers. So the honey's been accumulating until we hardly know what to do with it. We've built a village of honeycombs, and I've just had my people make me a splendid palace of honey. But it's our way to gather the sweet stuff, whether we need it or not, so we have to act according to our natures. I think we're going to build a mountain of honey next.
I'd like to see the honey palace,
said Twinkle.
And come with me,
answered the queen bee.
For it'll give me pleasure to show it to you.
Shall we go? Asked the girl lark, turning to Afel. Of course! It is quite a wonderful sight, and may interest you.
So they all flew away, the queen bee taking the lead, and passed directly over the bed of flowers with its swarm of buzzing, busy bees.
They remind me of a verse from Father Goose,
said Twinkle, looking curiously but half fearfully at the hundreds of big insects.
What's the verse?
Asked the queen.
Why, it goes this way,
answered the girl.
A bumblebee was buzzing on a yellow hollyhock, when came along a turtle who at the bee did mock, saying, "Prithee, Mr. Bumble, why make that horrid noise? It's really distracting, and everyone annoys." "I'm sorry," said quite humble the busy droning bee, "the noise is just my bumble, and natural, you see. And if I didn't buzz so, I'm sure that you'll agree, I'd only be a big fly and not a bumblebee."
"That's quite true,"
said the bee,
"and describes our case exactly. But you should know we are not named bumblebees by rights, but humblebees. The latter is our proper name."
"But why humble?"
asked Twinkle.
"Because we are common, workaday people, I suppose, and not very aristocratic,"
was the reply.
"I've never heard why they changed our name to Bumble, but since you recited that verse, I imagine it's on account of the noise our wings make."
They had now passed over the flower beds and approached a remarkable village where the houses were all formed of golden yellow honeycombs. There were many pretty shapes among these houses, and some were large and many stories in height, while others were small and had but one story. Some had spires and minarets reaching up into the air, and all were laid out into streets just like a real village. But in the center stood a great honeycomb building with so many gables and roofs and peaks and towers that it was easy to guess it was the queen bee's palace of which she had spoken. They flew in at a second-story window and found themselves in a big room with a floor as smooth as glass. Yet it was composed of many six-sided cells filled with honey, which could be seen through the transparent covering. The walls and roof were of the same material. And at the end of the room was a throne, shaped likewise of the honey cells, like everything else. On a bench along the wall sat several fat and sleepy-looking bumblebees, who scarcely woke up when their queen entered.
"Those are the drones,"
she told her visitors.
"It is useless to chide them for being lazy, because they're too stupid to pay attention to even a good scolding. Don't mind them in any way."
After examining the beautiful throne room, they visited the sleep chambers, of which there were many, and afterwards the parlors and dining room and workrooms. In these last were many bees building the six-sided pockets or cells for storing the honey in, or piling them up in readiness for the return of those who were gathering honey from the flowers.
"We're not really honeybees,"
remarked the queen.
"But gathering honey is our chief business, after all, and we manage to find a lot of it."
"Won't your houses melt when it rains?"
asked Twinkle.
"Nah. For the comb of the honey is pure wax,"
the queen bee replied.
"Water doesn't melt it at all."
"Where do you get all the wax from?" Chubbins inquired.
"From the flowers, of course. It grows on the stamens and is a fine dust called pollen, until we manufacture it into wax. Each of my bees carries two sacks, one in front of them to put the honey in, and one behind to put the wax in."
"That's funny," said the boy lark.
I suppose it may be to you, but to us, it is a very natural thing,
answered the queen. Chapter 18. Good News. Aphel and the children now bid the good-natured queen be goodbye and thanked her for her kindness. The messenger led them far away to another place that he called a suburb. And as they emerged from a thick cluster of trees into a second flower garden, they found the air filled with a great assemblage of butterflies, they being both large and small in size and colored in almost every conceivable manner. Twinkle and Chubbins had seen many beautiful butterflies, but never such magnificent ones as these, nor so many together at one time. Some of them had wings fully as large as those of the royal messenger himself, even when he spread them to their limit, and the markings of these big butterfly wings were more exquisite than those found upon the tail feathers of the proudest peacocks. The butterflies paid them no attention, but continued to flutter aimlessly from flower to flower. Chummins asked one of them a question, but got no reply. "Can't they talk?" he inquired of Aphel.
"Yes," said the messenger. "They all know how to talk, but when they speak, they say nothing that is important. They are brainless, silly creatures, for the most part, and are only interesting because they are beautiful to look at. The king likes to watch the flashes of color as they fly about, and so he promised them to live in this place. They are very happy, in their way, for there is no one to chase them or stick pins through them when they are caught."
Just then a chime of bells tinkled far away in the distance, and the royal messenger listened intently and said,
"It is my summons to His Majesty the King. We must return at once to the palace."
So they flew into the air again and proceeded to cross the lovely gardens and pass through the avenues of jeweled trees and the fragrant orchards and groves until at last they came to the royal bower of white flowers. The child larks entered with their guide and found the gorgeous king of birds still strutting on his perch on the golden bush and enjoying the admiring glances of his courtiers and ladies of his family. He turned as the children entered and addressed his messenger, saying,
"Well, my dear Aphel, have you shown the strangers all the sights of our lovely land?"
"Most of them, your majesty," replied Aphel.
"What do you think of us now?"
asked the king, turning his eyes upon the lark children.
"It must be the prettiest place in all the world,"
cried Twinkle with real enthusiasm. His majesty seemed very pleased.
"I'm very sorry you cannot live here always," he said.
"I'm not," declared Chubbins. "It's too pretty. I'd get tired of it very soon."
"He means,"
said Twinkle hastily, for she feared the blunt remark would displease the kindly king,
"that he isn't really a bird, but a boy who has been forced to wear a bird's body. And your majesty is wise enough to understand that the sort of life you lead in your fairy paradise would be very different from the life that boys generally lead."
"Of course," replied the king. "A boy's life must be a dreadful one."
"It suits me all right," said Chubbins.
The king looked at him attentively.
"Would you really prefer to resume your old shape and cease to be a bird?"
"Of course, if I could," replied Chubbins.
"Then I will tell you how to do it," said the king. "Since you told me your strange story, I have talked with my royal necromancer, who knows a good deal about magic, and especially about that same Tussex, who wickedly transformed you in the forest. The royal necromancer tells me that if you can find a tingleberry and eat it, you will resume your natural form again, for it is the one antidote in all the world for the charm the Tussex worked upon you."
What is a tingleberry?"
asked Twinkle anxiously, for this information interested her as much as it did Chubbins.
"I do not know," said the king, "for it is a common forest berry and never grows in our paradise. But doubtless you will have little trouble in finding the bush of the dingleberry when you return to the outside world."
The children were both eager to go at once and seek the tingleberry, but they could not be so impolite as to run away just then, for the king announced that he had prepared an entertainment in their honor. So they sat on a branch of the golden bush beside their friend Aphel, while at a nod from the king, a flock of the beautiful birds of paradise flew into the bower and proceeded to execute a most delightful and bewildering set of aerial evolutions. They flew swiftly in circles and spirals and triangles, and solid squares, and all that time sweet music was performed by some unseen band. It almost dazzled the eyes of the childlarks to watch this brilliant flashing of the colored wings of the birds. But the evolutions only lasted for a few minutes, and then the birds flew out again in regular ranks. Then the little brown ladybirds danced gracefully upon the carpet, their dainty feet merely touching the tips of the lovely flowers. Afterward, the flowers themselves took part and sang a delightful chorus, and when this was finished, the king said they would now indulge in some refreshment. Instantly, a row of bell-shaped blossoms appeared upon the golden bush, one for each bird present, and all were filled with the delicious ice that was as cold and refreshing as if it had been taken from a freezer. Twinkle and Chubbins asked for spoons and received them quickly, but all the others ate the ices with their bills. The king seemed to enjoy his as much as anyone, and Twinkle noticed that as fast as a blossom was emptied of its contents, it disappeared from the branch. The childlarks now thanked the beautiful but vain king very earnestly for all his kindness to them, and especially for telling them about the tingleberries. And when all the goodbyes had been exchanged, Ephel flew with them back to the tree where they had left the guardian of the entrance and their faithful comrade, Policeman Blue Jay. They were warmly greeted by the Blue Jay, who asked, "Did you enjoy the wonderful paradise?"
"Very much indeed," cried Twinkle. "But we're sorry you couldn't be with us."
"Never mind that. I've feasted my eyes upon all the beauties visible from this tree, and my good friend the guardian has talked to me and given me much good advice that will surely be useful to me in the future. So I have been quite contented while you were gone."
The children now gave their thanks to Ephel for his care of them and polite attention, and the royal messenger said he was pleased that the king had permitted him to serve them. They also thanked the green-robed guardian of the entrance, and then, accompanied by Policeman Blue Jay, they quit the golden tree and began their journey back to the forest. It was no trouble at all to return. The wind caught their wings and blew against them strongly, so that they had but to sail before the breeze and speed along until they were deep in the forest again. Then the wind moderated, and presently it died away altogether, so that they were forced to begin flying in order to continue their journey home. It was now the middle of the afternoon, and the policeman said, "I hope all has been quiet and orderly during my absence. There are so many disturbing elements among the forest birds, I always worry when they're left alone for many hours at a time."
"Oh, I'm sure they behave themselves," returned Twinkle. "They fear your power so much that the evil-minded birds don't dare to offend you by being naughty."
"That's true," said the policeman. "They know very well I won't stand for any nonsense, and will always insist that the laws be obeyed."
They were now approaching that part of the forest where they lived, and as the policeman concluded his speech, they were surprised to hear a great flutter of wings among the trees, and presently a flock of big black rooks flew toward them. At the head of the band was a saucy-looking fellow who wore upon his head a policeman's helmet and carried under his wing a club. Policeman Blue Jay gave a cry of anger as he saw this and dashed forward to meet the rooks.
"What does this mean, you rascal?" he demanded in a fierce voice. "Easy there, my fine dandy," replied the rook with a hoarse laugh. "Don't get saucy, or I'll give you a rap on the head."
The rooks behind him shrieked with delight at this impudent speech, and that made the mock policeman strut more absurdly than ever. The Blue Jay was not only astonished at this rebellion, but he was terribly angry as well.
"And that's my policeman's helmet and club," he said sternly. "Where did you get them?" "At your nest, of course. We made up our minds that we had a miserable Blue Jay for a policeman long enough, so the rook selected me in your place, and I'm going to make you birds stand around and obey orders. I can tell you, if you do as I command, you'll get along all right. If you don't, I'll pound you with your own club until you obey."
Again the rooks screamed in an admiring chorus of delight, and when the Blue Jay observed their great numbers, that they were all as large as he was, and some even larger and stronger, he decided not to risk an open fight with them just then, but to take the time to think over what was best to be done.
"I'll call the other birds to a meeting, and let them decide between us,"
he said to the rook.
That won't do any good, was the reply. We rooks have decided the matter already. We mean to rule the forest, and if any or all the birds dare to oppose us, we'll fight until we force them to serve us. Now then, what do you intend to do about it?
I'll think it over, said Policeman Blue Jay.
Huh, he's afraid. He's a coward,
yelled the rooks. And one of them added,
Stand up and fight if you dare.
I'll fight your false policeman, or any one of you at a time, replied the Blue Jay.
No, you won't. You'll fight us all together, or not at all, they answered.
The Blue Jay knew it would be foolish to do that, so he turned away and whispered to the Lark children,
Follow me, and fly as swiftly as you can.
Like a flash, he darted high into the air with Twinkle and Chubbins right behind him, and before the rooks could recover from their surprise, the three were far away. Then the big black birds gave chase, uttering screams of rage, but they could not fly so swiftly as the Blue Jay and the Larks, and were soon obliged to abandon the pursuit. When at last he knew that they had escaped the rooks, Policeman Blue Jay entered the forest again and went among the birds to call them all to a meeting. They obeyed the summons without delay, and were very indignant when they heard of the rebellion of the rooks and the insult that had been heaped upon their regularly elected officer. Judge Bullfinch arrived with his head bandaged with soft feathers, for he had met the rook policeman, and when he had objected, he had been severely pounded by the wicked bird's club.
But what can we do? He asked.
The rooks are a very powerful tribe, and the magpies and cuckoos and blackbirds are liable to say with them, if they seem to be stronger than we are. We might get all our people together and fall upon them in a great army and so defeat them,
suggested an oriole.
The trouble with that plan, decided the judge, is that we can only depend upon the smaller birds. The big birds might desert us. In that case, we would be badly beaten.
Perhaps it'll be better to submit to the rooks,
said a little chickadee anxiously.
We're neither warriors nor prize fighters. If we obey our new rulers, they may leave us in peace. No, indeed, cried a linnet. If we submit to them, they will think we're afraid and will treat us cruelly. I know the nature of these rooks, and believe they can only be kept from wickedness by a power stronger than their own.
Hear me out here, good friends, said the Blue Jay, who had been silent because he was seriously thinking. I have a plan for subduing these rebels, and it's one that I am sure will succeed. But I must make a long journey to accomplish my purpose. Go now quietly to your nests, but meet me at the judgment tree at daybreak tomorrow morning. Also, be sure to ask every friendly bird of the forest to be present, for we must insist upon preserving our liberty, or else be forever slaves of these rooks.
With these words, he rose into the air and sped swiftly upon his errand. The other birds looked after him earnestly.
I think it'll be well for us to follow his advice, said Judge Bullfinch after a pause. The Blue Jay is an able bird and has had much experience. Besides, we have ever found him just and honorable since the time we made him our policeman, so I feel that we may depend upon him in this emergency.
Well, it is all we can do, replied a robin.
And this remark was so true that the birds quietly dispersed and returned to their nests to await the important meeting the next morning.